League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everyone. Hello, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined today by my man, Ray G from Destination Debbie. You can follow him on Twitter at Ray G Q Q U E. And I really wanted to bring Ray on the show to talk today because over the last week, we've gotten the news of some opt-outs. And I think this is a super interesting season in Dynasty Fantasy Football, just like trying to figure out what do you want to do with your picks, right? So I got all these future picks. Do I want to trade them away? Do I think a 2021 pick is worth less? Do I think it's worth more? What about 2022 picks? You know, because we have the very next Kyler Murray, the very next Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin, these late breakouts. Well, we're not going to get to see some of these late breakouts this year if we get college football at all. So Ray, thank you very much for joining the show, man. How are you doing this morning?
Davis, I appreciate you, man. A fan of your work and the things that you've contributed to this fantasy space for a long time. So it's an honor to be on with you, man, sitting across from you virtually. And let's bang this out, man. I'm excited. I got some thoughts here, man. I'm doing well. It's Friday. Sun is shining. I'm not sick, so I'm feeling good, man. I'm ready to roll.
So let's start with this right here. We have Rondale Moore and Rashad Bateman. Both of these guys opt out. Both of them would have been in contention, I think, for the first wide receiver drafted in the 2021 NFL draft. And they still might be, too, right, by the way. That is still possible. Which one of those guys do you like more?
I mean, this is you're coming out the gates with the guillotine because I don't want to answer this question because I love both of those players. But if you're putting my feet to the fire, then I want Rondale Moore. Just slightly like the paper razor-ass thin margin above Rashad Bateman. I think his age-adjusted production from his true freshman season, even though he really only played one season of college football, what we saw him do at a Power 5 school, the Big 10, so let's get the Big 12 bias out of there. You know, he didn't play in the Pac-12 or the WAC-12 that some people call it. What he was able to do in the Big 10 as a true freshman was nothing short of historic from a Big Ten purposes from that wide receiver position. So if I had to pick between the two, I would say Rondale Moore. But both of those guys are, I truly believe, Davis, are special type talents coming into the NFL draft. And I would have had both of those guys rated really, really high here in this 2020 class.
So the interesting thing about Rondale Moore and his decision to opt out is he is really placing a bet on himself from his freshman year of just being like, you know what? I was so dynamic. I was so athletic. I was so great as a freshman at Purdue that there's no way that the NFL can underrate me. So for those of you guys who don't know, his freshman year at Purdue, I mean, these are video game numbers, 114 receptions, over 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns, then adding in 213 rushing yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. So 14 touchdowns and 13 games in the Big Ten for Purdue. And by the way, you know, it's not like Purdue is good, right? Purdue is a bad Big Ten team. And his quarterback was David Blau of Bling Blang Blau of Detroit Lions fame. So like this was not a guy who was really set up to succeed, basically. And he did so anyways, and then struggled with injuries last year for Purdue. What is your opinion though on his size though? Because he is
not worried. I'm not worried. He's short, he's not small. There's a difference. Marquise Brown Hollywood Brown is small. I mean, playing, it just blows my mind that he played last year under 160 pounds, if that report is in fact true, and he did gain 23 pounds to get up to 180 or 170, whatever he is. But I'm not concerned. And if you look at his size compared to, and I made this comparison last June, that he reminded me of a more explosive version of Steve Smith, former Carolina Panthers and Baltimore Ravens wide receiver. Steve Smith, when he measured in at the combine, he was 5'9", 184 pounds. And while times have changed in the NFL from 2001, whenever Steve Smith entered the league, the offenses seem to be more adapting to players in their skill set. At this point, Davis, what is prototype? You know, I think a lot of people think prototype wide receivers.
I mean, the smaller guys are the prototype now, right? Like let's look at CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. You know, 5 years ago, we would have been like, you know, those guys are a little bit undersized. We'd want them to be an inch taller, maybe 10 pounds heavier. But now, you know, 6 foot, 6'1", 210 pounds. That's right about prototypical NFL size. So more is small relative to the prototype still, but certainly less small than he would have been 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, dismissing the fact that he is a shorter wide receiver and there will be obstacles that he'll have to overcome. Does that make him an outlier? Maybe, but the age, his production breaking out at age 18 in a Power 5 conference, the historical hit rate of players with first-round draft capital that meet those analytical thresholds is pretty damn good. If he's drafted in the first round with that breakout age of 18 years old and 3 months, 18 and 4 months, he's going to have a good chance of at least being a top 24 wide receiver based on my man. I'm stealing people's stats, but Jesse Reaves is my guy, and we've talked about this quite a bit, Davis. So, I'm not worried about his size at all. I mean, not one bit of concern for me.
So I don't know if I'm concerned about his size in context of like his ability to produce on the field. I think one of the things you have to ask about with his size are like, you know, would an NFL team care, right? So would they care about drafting him in the first round if we even have a combine in 2021, yeah, right? Let's say that, yeah, let's say he gets there and he measures 5'5", let's say 170, right? You know, yeah, I actually think the fact that Marquise Brown smashed so hard when he was healthy for the Ravens is going to be like a huge trend for smaller wide receivers. I think that the NFL is going to lose some of that bias against smaller wide receivers because not only was Marquise Brown the first wide receiver selected in the draft when he went, but also he was successful, right? He played for a team that scored a bunch of points and that was really good. And that is going to open up the door for guys like Rondale Moore and other smaller wide receivers to still be selected in the first round.
Wasn't Andy Isabella selected ahead of DK Metcalf? Didn't that happen? I believe, I'm almost positive, Isabella was selected over DK.
Yes.
And when you're talking about...
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and he's Rondale Moore's size comp, but Rondale Moore is a far better football player than Andy Isabella. So, here's my thing. Worst case scenario, he's a second-round pick. There is no way, 0% chance, he is drafted outside of the top 64 players. 0% chance that happens.
Yeah. So the other guy who has opted out, and I think we'll get more because, you know, the NFL has had this opt-out date. And I think even if we do get college football games, I think we will see more opt-outs. But I actually like Bateman a little bit more. You know, I basically think that Bateman can probably play more roles in the NFL. Moore is going to be – he is going to be – nine routes and slants, and that's just going to be his NFL career, because of his size and because of how teams are going to use him. But Bateman, 6'2", 210. If you wanted to point out, you know, a wrinkle in why Bateman might not be considered as premium of a prospect, we just saw Tyler Johnson go in the fifth round of the NFL draft, and when Bateman and Johnson were on the field together, Johnson was more involved, more receptions, more yards, more touchdowns. Now, not a ton more, right? Not a ton more receptions, yards, and touchdowns, but Johnson was more productive. I mean, and also that can be just explained by like hierarchy stuff, right? So Bateman was the younger player. Bateman had not been there as long. And it was also the first year that, you know, Minnesota football was any good. But why don't you tell the people a little bit about Bateman and his opt out?
Yeah, listen, I've said this once. I've said it 10 times, 100 times. The top players, I truly believe from my involvement in collegiate athletics, people that I know, they're not going to play. I think this is just, we're just getting to that point. So I foresee Ja'Marr Chase. I know he said the other day that he's going to play. I'm not buying it. We'll see when LSU lines up. But I don't think a lot of these top guys, I don't see the reward. The reward is not worth the risk for these players. And Rashad Bateman, you like him more than Rondale Moore? Okay, I agree with you. I mean, I flip a coin and I'd be happy with either of those players. He has zero weaknesses to his game from a on-field playing perspective. Zero. He can line up in the slot. He can line up at flanker. He can line up at X. He runs every route. I believe he has the best hands, just hands catcher in the 2021 class. He's got speed, size. His age-adjusted production is there. And here's the thing, Davis. Even though you are not a film grinder, that's not your thing, right? If I turned on the Minnesota tape and you looked at number 13 and you looked at number six, there's no it's clear as day who the better player was, at least athletically on the field. And I think he's going to test as a pretty good athlete. I don't he's not Rondale Moore, which verified out of high school 42-inch vertical jump, fort shuttle, and a 4.33 confirmed out of high school, which is ridiculous for Rondale Moore. He's not that level of explosive, but he's no he's no Tyler Johnson. He's not Tyler Johnson. He's a more athletic player. So, you know, those stats, that those age-adjusted metrics combined with his athleticism, I think it was the right move for him. I think it was the right move.
I think that a guy who's probably wishing that he would have changed his mind about declaring for the draft right about now is Tylan Wallace from Oklahoma State. Now, you know, not great for him that he wouldn't have been able to run at the combine because he tore his ACL. But I imagine that probably, like, if he entered it in the supplemental draft, right, which I think it, I don't actually know when they have the date set for the supplemental draft. I would think that there'd probably be some guys who would opt into it, or maybe it's already passed at this point. I don't even know. But I would imagine Tylan Wallace would have went in the third round of the NFL draft, you know, kind of in that you know, somewhere in between like Denzel Mims, LaVisca Chenault, like those style of guys, like right around there, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think he is kicking himself in the backside for not declaring. I think there are a couple of other players who are doing the same thing, especially if they opt out. But Tylan Wallace is a good receiver. You know, we say this all the time, scout the player, not the helmet. It's just so hard to overlook certain wide receivers, Baylor wide receivers, Oklahoma State wide receivers. I think Tylan Wallace is good. I think he's good, right? But just because you're good doesn't mean you're going to be what we want for fantasy. You're going to be a consistent scorer of fantasy points. I think he's a good wide receiver. I think his draft stock is definitely going to be impacted. His injury, him being a senior, coming back for senior season, and then, you know, who knows what Oklahoma State is going to do this year. Who knows if he's going to play, but if he opts out, I mean, he's kind of in that Rondale Moore boat. Like, you know, two seasons of no production. He had that, you know, breakout sophomore season. So he's somebody that probably needs to play. But here's the thing, and I'm asking you this question. How much do you even care? The schedules are watered down. They're playing right in conference games only. So he goes out there and he catches 52 balls for 812 yards. Like, how do we adjust analytically for a shortened season? Do you really care if he's just out there shredding TCU and Texas Tech and Baylor? I don't even know why. This is just weird. I don't even know why it really matters. Like, do you need to see Travis Etienne rush for 300 yards versus North Carolina State in order to feel like, exactly, oh yeah, this kid is good? I don't think it matters this year, man.
Yeah. So I think for Etienne, for Hubbard, for Ja'Marr Chase, I don't need to see anything from those guys. Those guys have solidified for me. Najee Harris, don't need to see anything from him. Terry from Florida State, don't need to see anything from him. Now, Would I like to see more from Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith? Absolutely, because with those Alabama guys, you know, you just never know. Well, are these guys crushing because they're Alabama and they got to play with, you know, the best offensive line in college football? They got to play some with Tua and then some with the I don't even remember his name, the white kid?
Mac Jones.
Mac Jones, yeah. So who probably, by the way, will be like a seventh-round NFL draft pick and be a backup for 4 years and then go work for ESPN like Greg McElroy and all the other Bama quarterbacks. But I think that I would like to see more from Waddle and Smith, see who has more production between the two of them, see how they do without Ruggs and, you know, without Jerry Jeudy there. You know, I think that stuff tends to matter. George Pickens from Georgia, I think that I need to see more. Like, right now I'm looking at some consensus Debbie rankings that has Pickens as the sixth overall player. And I know that he's like one of those guys who was like a five-star recruit out of high school. And that stuff, actually, if you go back and look at just the correlation between five-star recruits, draft position, and like future fantasy points, like that, it actually ends up correlating, because the guys who are that high pedigree get chances in college. And then because they get chances in college, they get chances in the NFL. So that would matter. But like, for example, I think I would rather have Najee Harris, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and those guys in Dynasty Leagues and Debbie Leagues right now instead of Pickens, just because we really have seen nothing from Pickens at a real competitive level yet.
Man, that you are making me smile over here with the Najee Harris love, because I'm with you. I don't need to see anything else from Najee Harris. He's a beast. But I ask you, because you do dive into the numbers, does his age, what I keep hearing is he's old. He's going to be an old running back when he enters the league. Does that, how much of that impacts your decisions? For me personally, I don't really care. I he's going to get through his first contract, and that's all I really care about. Anything on top of that first 4 years, if I can get a running back two out of him, if he's still an RB1 after his fourth season, gravy on top of it. But all I really care about is that first 4 year, 5 year window, if they're a first round pick, and then anything I get on top of that, I'm fine with it. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because Najee is going to be, you know, Keyshawn Vaughn age wise whenever he's takes his first NFL snap.
I think for running backs, you really can't think about them past their first contract, right? Like, so right now in the NFL, these are guys who are going to be playing on the team that drafted them on their second contract. We got McCaffrey, right? We got Barkley, we got Zeke, and I believe Kamara has not signed an extension yet. It's possible that he has, but I don't think that he has. Dalvin Cook is still playing on his rookie contract right now, and I think that's it.
We got Henry. Henry.
Okay, yeah, Henry got the, but Henry didn't get a contract extension. He got a franchise tag, right? Oh,
you're
no,
right. You're...
no, no, no. They did. They were going to tag him, but then they ended up coming to the deal.
That's right. Yes, so they found. So
that's five running backs. All those guys go in the first round of drafts right now. And you would even in a dynasty league right now, though, if you were trying to trade Zeke, who goes in the first round of startups, but if you were trying to trade, him away right now, you would not be able to get DJ Moore, your favorite young wide receiver, in a first round pick, right? So if you offered Zeke for DJ Moore, LaVisca Chenault, and a 2022 first, you would get rejected, right?
Probably.
And so I'm just pretty much team, you get the running back for his first contract, and if he gives you anything else in that fifth, sixth year, I think it's a bonus.
With you, 100%, lock and key.
Yeah, so I'm not sweating I don't really like Keyshawn Vaughn, but I'm not sweating him because of his age. I'm just sweating him because I think he's a really average player, basically.
Yep. I don't disagree.
Okay, some of these other Debbie guys that I think we might want to see a little bit more from: Breece Hall from Iowa State. He would be a guy who I would expect right now, if we had to do the 2021 draft right now with no games, I actually think he would be a guy that NFL teams would want to see more from. I don't think he would be like a first or second day pick right now with really only like kind of half a season of production under his belt.
Yeah, Breece is good. I think he's got talent. He has the size to do it, and he has sort of that skill set, right? But it was only that season, half a season, full season from him. He definitely needs more time. We need to see a little bit more from Breece Hall. But I do like him. I think in his class right now where we stand, he's probably the top guy. But he still need to see some more out of him. And, you know, it's we keep talking about and – up until this point, I hadn't really thought about it. We keep talking about the top 2021 prospects opting out. I mean, we could see some 2022 guys say, what if George Pickens was like, I'm not playing this season. Like, I'm not going out there and I'll try it again in 20. I know we kind of talked about it briefly before the show. This is just this is unprecedented. It's weird. And it's going to be interesting to see how NFL evaluators value these guys if they all declare for the draft with once. And hey, Davis, I'm just gonna say it, Jamar Chase, one season of production.
One season. I mean, oh yeah,
it was historic. It was historic production. I mean, that entire LSU team, it was ridiculous. But one season of production. Rondell Moore, one season of production. Najee Harris, yes, he's played all 3 years, but really one season of smash production. I'm not worried about him. ETN's been a baller since he stepped on the field, but it's unprecedented. It's weird.
It's very bizarre. Also, while I'm sitting here, I'm realizing, you know, I think that Trevor Lawrence is a layup, right? He is going to go first overall. He would never have to play another down of college football. But the quarterback position, it's kind of, we always just see a late riser at the quarterback position, right? We always see guys who have a really strong final season end up going way higher than we think. And so let's say we don't see more Justin Fields. You know, we have seen all we're going to see from Trey Lance. We've seen all we're going to see from Jaden Daniels, from Jamie Newman, like those guys. I wonder if the biggest impact NFL draft-wise is, what if we have a year where there's only two first-round quarterbacks, right, where Trevor Lawrence and Trey Lance go in the first round of the 2021 draft, and that's it, right? I actually think that's really something that we could see happen.
So playing off of this, what I think is going to happen is, you're right, some guys don't have to play another down, and Trevor Lawrence could just say, I'm chilling, let me know what NFL team I'm on, and I'll get to work at that point in time. He's going to be the first overall pick. Trey Lance is going to be a top 15, top 20 pick. Justin Fields is going to be a top pick. But what I think is going to happen is, if these players opt out, it will give the next tier of guys, and the quarterback name that's on my radar is Kyle Trask out of Florida. He's got that NFL size. He's not really mobile. Yep. I like my quarterbacks to be a little more mobile than he is, but he played well last year, and Florida's got a really good team. So what I think we could see happen is, some of these second-level players, you know, these third-tier guys, they get a chance to shine during the season while the other players sit out. And it doesn't necessarily push Trevor Lawrence and Trey Lance down, but maybe it props some of those under the radar guys up, and they end up being drafted probably a little higher than they should be. I'm thinking about Travis Etienne's backup, Lynjay Dixon, who is a talented player, was a four-star recruit, tons of talent. If Etienne sits out, Lynjay Dixon's going to run for over 1,100 yards this year, where, you know, during a regular season, he's a fifth, sixth round pick, but because he goes out there and smashes in COVID shortened season, what if he ends up propping himself up to be a day two running back pick? I think we're going to see a lot of these.
Yeah.
I know people are fearful, but I think it's going to actually elevate some of the depth in this class by having an opportunity to see some of these other players who would not have had the chance to star in those offenses if those number ones actually played.
Well, and I mean, there's this whole other wrinkle of like, okay, well, we like defensive players are going to opt out too, right? I'm definitely not the guy to ask about defensive prospects as it pertains to the NFL draft. I just, you know, I not a huge depth of knowledge there, but like, so not only are we going to have defensive prospects who are, you know, not creating a name for themselves because they are not on the field, and maybe guys who have, you know, some really amazing 2019 tape, guys who are five-star recruits, guys who their head coaches, when they're meeting with scouts and with teams, are going to be like, oh, you know, this defensive end, this middle linebacker, this cornerback, you guys got to watch him. You guys got to, you know, bring him into the facility because he's crazy. But also, like, don't we think maybe college defenses are going to be worse, right? And if, well, and we actually saw this in the 2011 NFL season with shorter training camps, defenses are kind of more behind than offenses are. So I'm wondering if there are just like some crazy seasons potentially coming out in college football where like every conference looks like the Big 12, right? No one's playing any defense. They're basically playing flag football out there. And then, you know, what do you do when, you know, Theo Weiss from Oklahoma actually has a better season than D.D. Westbrook and CeeDee Lamb? Like, what do you do with that information? I mean, I don't really know.
Dude, you're causing – don't do this because this is going to cause pure chaos because you are 100% correct. That is. And as a former college defensive back, I can tell you that it takes time to gel, you know. We saw Caleb Farley. He's probably the number one rated cornerback in this draft class, opt out of V-Tech. ACC, that's Clemson, that's North Carolina, Sam Hall, Dyami Brown, those wide receivers. I mean, defenses are going to take a hit, and offenses gel just quicker, man. You said it. Happened. We saw it in 2011. It's a lot easier when you know I'm running a nine route opposed to, all right, the safety's got to know what the corner's doing, the linebackers and defensive formations and rotations. We're definitely going to see some high scoring, and it's going to be wild when, yeah, Theo Weiss drops 1,500-something yards this season, and, you know, now he's jumped up over Rondale Moore. He's, you know, I know they're two different draft classes, but I'm just saying, when you get those kind of lower-level players, Tyler Vaughns out of USC. If Amon-Ra St. Brown didn't play, now Tyler Vaughns, as his senior season, goes out there and smashes with Keaton Slovis this year. I mean, how high does it push him up? So it is using this word bizarre and weird, but everything you're saying, you're going to have to rely on two-year-old data. You're going to have to rely on two-year-old film. You're going to have to really trust your process when trying to make a sound decision. And the NFL will help us out with draft capital, right? You know, they'll help us out when these players are selected. But pre-draft, yeah, there's going to be a lot of wrong takes out there, but this will be fun.
And it wouldn't surprise me if we see a bunch of fourth-year breakouts from pass catchers, you know, from wide receivers and from tight ends, just because we would think that, first of all, incoming freshmen, right? So, like, or, like, maybe even redshirt freshmen, but definitely true freshmen should have, like, no chance of playing this year just because they're not going to know the playbook. They're not going to really have much time. Like, they wouldn't have had any time in spring, you know, to show out. So like, I just would think that if you're a senior, you're at one of these big programs, you know, you're at Texas, you're at Ohio State, you're at LSU, wherever, you're going to get to play more than you would have in a normal year with a bunch of five-star recruits to compete with. So, you know, like sticking with some of the older guys, you know, Sage Surratt, you know, for example, some of these like Nico Collins at Michigan, Warren Jackson at Colorado State. You know, just really would not surprise me if we see some 21, 22-year-old prospects have, like, you know, their very first, 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown season. And those are the hardest type of prospects to evaluate because you just ask, well, why did it take you so long to get good?
Oh, yeah. Get ready. Trey Sermon is going to smash at Ohio State this year. Trey Sermon, yeah, who could never command the backfield at Oklahoma with Kennedy Brooks, who is not very good in my opinion, but he's going to crush this year. You know, J.K. Dobbins, we saw him run for 2,000 yards in that offense last year. Justin Fields is back. They still have a strong offensive line, and they're playing in, you know, Big Ten. We just saw Micah Parsons, the best defender in the Big Ten, opt out. He's going to smash, and then people are going to be looking at Trey Sermon like you said, his fourth-year breakout. Finally, he's going to rush for over 1,400 yards and prop himself up. So it's, yeah, Davis, it's the advice that fantasy gamers are going to need to pay attention to this year is going to be more critical than ever, because there's going to be a lot of smoke screens. There's going to be a lot of things that probably would not have happened during a regular college football season, but this is not a regular college football season. And hell, what if it's shortened? What if we start playing and 5 weeks in, would they cancel it up? I just I don't know, man. I'm basing a lot of my pre-draft evaluations where I'm slotting these guys on 2018 and 2019. And I just don't know how much 2020 really matters in college football this year. I really don't.
So with that being said, you know, in these dynasty leagues, in these Debbie leagues, what are you thinking the right thing to do with 2020 picks is? And which I guess, by the way, is also saying that the 2020 NFL season happens in a way where like your league goes forward as normal, that you have payouts as normal. And that's a whole different element of strategy. I think the way I've been treating, especially 2021 second, third, and fourth round picks, is that they should be worth way less than the average second, third, and fourth round pick. I think as far as first round picks go, you know, we're looking at Etienne, we're looking at Bateman, we're looking at Rondale Moore, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Trey Lance in super flex leagues. I think as far as like the first, let's say eight picks or so, I think those would be the guys that would have been the first eight picks regardless. But, you know, back end of the first, the rest of those picks, I would imagine that those picks should be worth less.
So while I agree with you, that is the reason why I want them, because they are worth less. Because when we look at who went in the second round this year, we're talking about thinking of 2020. Was Denzel Mims a second round pick? You had like Denzel Mims, Bryan Edwards was falling to the third. People taking AJ Dillon in the second, Zach Moss in the second. I'm telling you right now, man, season or not, I would prefer Tylan Wallace in the second. I would prefer, if St. Brown falls out of the first in super flex leagues, and a lot of us playing tight end premium leagues. Here's the thing, Davis. The tight end class in 2021 is exponentially better than 2020. 2020 was absolute crap for a tight end position. We can really see, I truly believe that we will see two tight ends drafted in the first round with the potential of a third. The quarterback position still looks pretty good at the top. You've got three first-round studs at the quarterback position. Running back is a little bit lower than 2020 with, to me, there's three tier one guys. But the wide receiver class is deep.
Very deep.
There's a chance that Tamarion Terry, Seth Williams, those are second-round picks. So they may be worth less right now. By the time everything is said and done and you get those three tight ends, Jordan Pitts and Freiermuth declare, you get those eight or nine wide receivers declare, I think you're going to be sitting in a good spot there in the second and third round. And if the stars sit out, those backups, they get a chance to play. Jarrett Patterson out of Buffalo, Warren Jackson from Colorado State that you mentioned, they've now elevated their draft stock. And even if you don't believe in those players, somebody will. And you can sell those 2021 seconds and thirds to those players, to those fantasy gamers, those league mates who do want a piece of Sage Surratt, who do. We didn't even mention Jamie Newman. I mean, there's a shot, outside shot, that Jamie Newman's a first-round pick at the quarterback position. So I still want him. I still want him. And what I tell people is, remember Dez Bryant? He didn't play his junior season either, and he didn't forget how to freaking go catch the ball and be an absolute monster. And some of these players are even more athletic than Dez Bryant was. And granted, Oklahoma State do numbers, so his production was crazy. But I'm not worried about these dudes sitting out, man. What's the difference between Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman sitting out this year, or Cooper Kupp tearing his ACL in training camp and missing an entire NFL season? Now, yes, Cooper Kupp was in the NFL, but he still missed a season of competition. They're not going to forget how to freaking play. Like, Najee's not going to forget how to run the ball. Jamar Chase is not going to forget how to catch the ball and run routes. I think it's a little overblown. I think them sitting out is a little overblown based on what's presented to us. It's not like it's a normal college football season and they're saying, I don't want to play. They're playing, what, eight games? Like, I'm not playing eight games. Like, why would I risk tearing my ACL in eight ACC games, 10 ACC games? I should just focus on what my future job is going to be at the next level, and that's my NFL employer.
Yeah. So I think the kind of from thinking about this conversation, what I'm realizing the impact is going to be is I think that the value of like the super studs is not really going to change all that much. You know, thinking about Ja'Marr Chase, Trevor Lawrence, ETN, Najee Harris, those guys, but there are going to be, if in fact, you know, 8, 9, 10 games of the college football season does end up playing, you know, I would imagine that there are going to be guys who are going to create value in which there was no value in existence before. You know, they're going to become late second round rookie picks, whereas they would have been undrafted before. There's going to be more guys with college level production than there would have been before, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and how do you feel about that though, right? If
there's just going to be some guys who are busts, right? There are just going to be some guys who had very good fight, who the Josh Doctson, the Laquan Treadwell types were like, you know, they flashed for 1 year, they had a sick run, a great game against a good defense, right? They had a good game against Georgia, a good game against Bama, and people look back and they're like, wow, that was incredible. And then they just go on to do nothing in the NFL because it was just it was a weird sample.
Yep. And I think we have to be mindful of that, right? We have to be mindful of this weird sample sized season. And I cannot wait until you guys start diving into the analytical side of this season and what those numbers really mean or what they tell us about some of these players this season. I'm really interested to see how all of this plays out.
Yeah, I am very interested as well. So I want to talk to you about some controversial NFL dudes because, you know, I like to get the perspective of someone who comes at the game a little bit differently than me. And the first guy is Ronald Jones, because to me, Ronald Jones is one of the biggest divides between well, first of all, he's just a very controversial player in general because he's got people who love him. He has people who hate him. And I mean, first off, what do you think of Ronald Jones's pass blocking just from what you've watched? Like, do you think he's fine? Do you think he is like horrible? Do you think he is good? Like, just from your perspective, do you think he is a at least average pass blocker?
No, not really. He's not very good
in
that department. He's not very good in that department, but he's gotten better. I'll say that. He's not horrible. Chuba Hubbard is horrible. Ronald Jones is just not very good in that department. I've seen him pick up the blitz and he's done it before, but yeah, just to answer that question, he's a little below average in that department.
Okay, so what are you know, if you're Bruce Arians, if you are the on the offensive staff there in Tampa Bay, what makes you, from a, you know, a coaching perspective, from when you guys are watching tape in the facility, what are you looking at where you're like, man, it's just, we got to get Ronald Jones more touches, right? We want him to be the starter. We want him to be the guy. Like, what are the things about him that really stick out?
All right, I know this is going to sound so just football-y, but it's the reality of the sport. I think sometimes we look at things so black and white. It's numbers, it's production on the field. But the reality is, just like in our personal lives, we strive to be better in our work, personally, in friendships, relationships. We work at it. These dudes work, right? Like, we have to – I think part of me – give players the benefit of the doubt that every year that they've spent in that job, in that craft, they get better to some degree every year, and until they hit a point where they start to get worse, their skills diminish. But he was one of the youngest running back in the NFL coming in as in 2018. He was a young player. And let me tell you something. They don't work on pass blocking stuff. I've talked to multiple people who have ends with NFL scouts. I know somebody that knows Jalen Samuels personally, and they asked him, how much did you guys focus on pass blocking at North Carolina State? And he's like, zero.
Yeah,
in college, you don't have the time to do that. There are practice limitations. You don't have time. We got to install a game plan, run the plays, let's go do it. So some of those things they get better at. But when you look at Ronald Jones, he stunk as a freshman, his rookie season. I mean, he did nothing, literally like nothing. And then last season, over 1,000 combined yards. And you can't tell me that watching him on the field, he did not look light years better than he did as a rookie. And we can only make the assumption that he's going to take another step forward. They did invest in Keyshawn Vaughn, but I think Keyshawn Vaughn is average at best. Like
he's a transfer running back who went to Illinois and Vanderbilt. Like it's not like this guy was sharing a backfield at Alabama or something. Like he just is a very average player.
Exactly. And they needed somebody. I mean, they lost Peyton Barber, but they needed another back. All they have is Dare Ogunbowale. So I'm not concerned about him. It's what we saw on the field from Ronald Jones in 2019, and then the assumption that he's going to take a step forward in 2020, they're going to give him a shot, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that is like the most likely thing, right? Is that that he does get a shot? That they're like, look, so the coaching staff there did not spend the second round pick on him, but the organization spent the second round pick on him. He had 1,000 yards the prior season. They needed, right, because they let Peyton Barber go. They did need somebody, right? You can't go into the season with Ronald Jones and Dare. Like, you got to have someone else. And, I mean, LeSean McCoy is cooked. Whatever. Like, I really probably don't think McCoy is even going to make the team, I would imagine.
Yeah. I'm not. People are, like, flipping out. They got Shady. Shady is – he's good for a spurt here or there. But there's no way he's commanding the significant opportunity in that backfield. I think it's almost by default, right? And we got to be mindful. Just because he starts out doesn't mean he's going to finish, but I don't think he's going to relinquish that role. I do think Keyshawn Vaughn and Dare will be involved in the offense, but I think people have got to get that bias of 2018 out of their head with Ronald Jones. Sometimes so much propaganda is spewed about players, and I've been victim of it myself with Henry Ruggs, for example. But I think that dirty taste that we have in our mouth from 2018, being in a class with Nick Chubb and Saquon Barkley and Kerryon Johnson, I think he's going to get a shot this season. This is the season for Ronald Jones. If he's going to be something that we truly need to invest in Dynasty, we're going to see it this season. And if we don't see it this season, then that's probably going to be it for him.
Yeah. So that is actually pretty key. If Ronald Jones gets benched for Keyshawn Vaughn or LeSean McCoy or Dare this year, right? If Ronald Jones has 16 catches and 112 rushes this year, like, well, we can just write him off. We don't need to be invested there anymore.
Yep.
Okay. This second tier of rookie wide receivers, so not the absolute cream of the crop, but the Laviska Shenault, the Denzel Mims, those guys. I mean, first off, Laviska Shenault, like, that's my dude. I am so ready for him to crush for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But there are a lot of people who are like, man, Laviska Shenault is slow. He looks slow when I watch him. Are you one of these folks?
No. I don't think he's slow, and I was on record to saying that I think just talent-wise with the ball in his hands, I think he's one of the most talented wide receivers in the 2021 class, period. He literally is like a tank with the ball in his hands. He's physical. I think he's quite explosive, and the fact that he ran a 4.5 whatever with a torn abdomen, hernia, whatever the hell. Yeah. He ran that 40 in a big black t-shirt in the first place. Like, who does that? He had a big ass t-shirt on and he's running the 40 with a hernia and still dropped a 4.5 at 200. And how many pounds is he? 220?
He's like 220, 225. Yeah.
That's pretty freaking ridiculous if you ask me. I think the physical tools are there. Here's my problem with Laviska, and I don't know how much Colorado football you watched. Every play, and I'm not exaggerating, it seemed like he was limping off of the field every other series. Didn't do anything as a freshman. Hurt as a sophomore, torn labrum, something with his foot, hurt at the – I mean, it was the epitome of Laviska Shenault's career for him to be injured at the combine. Banged up. And then he goes to the combine and banged up there. And it's his style of play. He's not going to change. He's a physical receiver. That's how he plays. That's how he wins. That's what made him successful. Wildcat quarterback, rushes out of the backfield. He's not going to turn into something different at the next level. So while I'm not this injury, like, I try not to let injury bias affect my fantasy decisions, but literally he has not been able to stay on the field at all. So I think those people, and I think I've got one LaVisca Chenault share, you're going to get the production, but you cannot, do not cry when he's in and out of your lineup every 3 weeks. You know, he's going to have a boom week here, and then if he misses two games, you know what you're getting with Chenault. I have a hard time. But based on cost, right, depending on where you're drafting him, I'm not taking him in the first round. If you're talking mid-second, okay, in a startup, I think that's worth it. I would take LaVisca Chenault over Zach Moss or, you know, some of these other players. So I don't think it's a bad bet. He's got the talent. I need to see him stay on the field, man.
Yeah, what do you think about Zach Moss? So, like, for me, anytime a running back is that slow at the combine, and I know that his agent said that he had a groin issue as well, but, you know, to me, Zach Moss really seems more like just a grinder, right? Like, he is more of a grinder, a Sean Green style guy than anything else. Like, you know, just not really anyone who ever seems like a difference maker at the NFL level.
Yeah, they got to stop comparing him to Frank Gore. People are comparing him to Frank Gore, the 100-year-old Frank Gore. Frank Gore was not a grinder in the prime of his career. He was a dominant feature back for the San Francisco 49ers. I don't want Zach Moss. I think he's touchdowns, that's the least stickiest metric. So if you're banking on him getting goal line carries and scoring touchdowns to produce fantasy points, it's probably not good process. They still have three running backs in the backfield with Josh Allen, Devin Singletary, and Zach Moss. And Josh Allen's going to punch it in. If they're at the one, you better believe Josh Allen's probably going to be sneaking that up the middle. He's not going to be the primary pass catcher. So you're talking about a grinder, a first and second down, unathletic, slow grinder. And that is a player that I really want no part of. If I miss and Zach Moss is some all-pro Pro Bowl running back, fine. I'd be just fine missing on him, but I really just don't. He's a handcuff. He's I wouldn't even say a high upside handcuff. He's not Alexander Mattison. He's not a Tony Pollard. He's just kind of a guy that you plug into your lineup and hope he scores a touchdown, and I don't want to bank on those guys.
Yeah, so this year I actually think he's better in kind of redraft than in dynasty, because just like long term, I don't know if he ever has that ceiling to be like a multi-year RB1. I don't know if he'll ever generate enough touches. I mean, maybe he has one crazy year with touchdowns, but like for this upcoming season, you know, they really don't like playing TJ Yeldon that much, and it seems like they are also not quite ready to make Devin Singletary a full-time player right away. I mean, maybe they will eventually, and maybe Singletary will end up being the guy who crushes his ADP this year. But yeah, Moss, well, my buddies, Pat Crane and Peter Overzet, like Zach Moss a lot more than I do. So we just did a draft together, and I kind of let myself, you know, just whatever go there. But like, you know, I like Boston Scott a lot more in terms of a guy who I think is going to have some standalone value and some contingent value as well. Do you like Boston Scott?
Sneaky. I like it. Yes, I do like it. I don't think he was a fluke. I don't think he was a fluke. Granted, I don't expect him to become Austin Eckler here, but I definitely think he's flex worthy in seasonal leagues. And I think he's worth, I think he could be flex worthy in seasonal leagues. And I definitely think he's worth a draft pick in dynasty leagues. I like that archetype running back. I want running back. I've got a type. I like explosive running backs that can do multiple things, catch the ball out of the backfield, run the ball, and he fits that mold. And in that field, I don't even know who the backup to Miles Sanders is. Is it, but Jordan Howard's gone. Is it Boston Scott? Is the backup to Miles Sanders? I can't name a third running back.
Yeah. He would be mostly the backup, and probably because they, you know, they just have so few receiving options, right? So Alshon is on the physically unable to perform list. DeSean Jackson hasn't played a full season since 2016. You know, Arcega Whiteside, rest in peace, buddy. I thought you were going to be great. Seems like you're probably not going to be great. I mean, maybe Rager's ready to play from day one, but it would be, you know, just not a lot of wide receivers are ready to play in the NFL in week one. Normally it takes them some time. Nelson Agholor is not there anymore. Marquise Goodwin opted out for the season. You know, I think Scott is going to get some snaps. Scott and Sanders are going to get snaps of both of them being on the field together at the same time, just because they need more talented players.
Agreed, man. And I as you're rattling those names off, it's like, wow, Alshon's hurt. even when he comes back, he'll get hurt again. Whiteside, I don't think he's it. You've got a converted quarterback. You know, Greg Ward, he looked all right, but he's still – it's still Greg Ward that we're talking about. You got the two tight ends that will probably be the leading, like, targets is Zach Ertz. Is probably going to be the leading receiver for that team. But I do think Jalen Reagor is going to be the wide receiver one on that team this year. I don't know how consistent he'll be. I think he'll have some absolute boom weeks, and then he'll probably dud a couple of weeks because he is a rookie wide receiver and probably the focal point outside of Ertz and Goddard. But Boston Scott, man, he – the more I think about it, he could be in line for a pretty nice little workload week in and week out, right? What are we talking about? If he can get a 9 to 11, you know, touches a game, and especially if those touches are primarily receptions, that can be pretty nice for us in fantasy. You know, yeah. if that's his role, you know, he carries the ball 5 or 6 times when Miles Sanders needs a breather and then catches, you know, 4 to 5 balls a game, it might be all right, man, for a flex play, right? Deeper lineups, yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of us, we hate drafting Leonard Fournette. We hate drafting David Johnson. Some of us, we don't want to draft running backs until later in the draft. So we got to get us some Boston Scott. So the last group of guys I wanted to ask you about, I think there's this really interesting group of young tight ends where we have Mike Gesicki, Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson. They all kind of go in the same range of drafts. They are all kind of in that same tier of value in dynasty leagues right now. People have very strong opinions about these group of guys. Which one of those three do you like the best?
I'm probably going to stick to my pre-draft process and what we did see from Noah Fant in 2019. It's probably Noah Fant, then TJ Hawkinson, then Mike Gesicki. Now, Albert Wilson did opt out, so, you know, law of conservation of targets, you know, Mike Gesicki.
Alan Hearns, too, also opted out.
Yeah, well, shit. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this question. I like all three.
Chan Gailey hates tight ends, though. So the offensive coordinator in Miami, he's like literally never used tight ends.
But is Mike Gesicki even a tight end? I mean, he's like
he's more of a wide receiver.
But I get what you're saying. I still like Noah Fant. He did have over 500 receiving yards, and is a tight end to do that as a rookie? You don't see that often, right? I think Mark Andrews hit that threshold. Evan Ingram smashed it. Herndon did. But it was pretty impressive, and he wasn't very good as a rookie. I mean, he struggled mightily in pass blocking.
Yeah, he can't block. Noah Fant is a great example of a guy who really is just a big slot wide receiver because he is not out there to be blocked.
Yeah, he's not good in that department. But that's the thing, Davis. I was ridiculed when I said I like Noah Fant more than TJ Hawkinson. Everybody was
I liked him more than Hawkinson too.
Hawk is the better player. He's the better overall tight end. Yeah, probably, but I don't care about that. I want this guy to line up in the slot and destroy nickel cornerbacks and safeties. And Noah Fant is one of the most athletic tight ends we've seen since Vernon Davis, and Hawkinson's no slouch himself. But I still like Fant, and I think he provides a discount now because everybody is so concerned about the pass volume with Sutton, with Jerry Jeudy, with KJ Hamler. They drafted another stinking tight end. I still think Noah Fant is going to get his from that tight end position, and it doesn't take much to be a top 12 tight end, but I definitely think he's one of those players that we've seen as value suppressed. Now, I don't know what ADP data suggests, but I definitely think that just listening and watching what people talk about, you don't hear Noah Fant's name tossed around as much, but that's my guy, man. I'm big on Noah Fant.
So I'm big on Noah Fant too. Here are all of the, these are all rookie tight ends to have more than 500 yards and 40 receptions. So it's Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. It's Noah Fant. It's Dwayne Allen way back in the day with the Peyton Manning Colts. It's a fellow by the name of Tony McGee, who I've never heard of. Jeremy Shockey, former first-round draft pick to the Giants, and then he played for the New Orleans Saints as well. And then it's some dudes literally all the way back in the 60s, like Mike Ditka, but like literally guys I've never heard of. So it's only ever happened 11 times in NFL history where a rookie tight end has had 50 receptions and more, or 500 yards and 40 receptions or more. So like, rookie tight end has just never produced. So like, I'm not even going to hate on Fant for being a bad pass blocker for being kind of efficient per route, just because rookie tight ends never get that kind of volume.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, he looked like a rookie out there. There were some games where he was dropping some passes, but despite all of that, 11 in the history, and you freaking had to go back to Mike Ditka? I mean, that's pretty rare territory that he's in. And, again, you know, Drew Lock. I'm not the biggest Drew Lock fan, but taking a step forward, and it seems like that organization said, you know what? If we can't beat the Chiefs with defense, let's join them and try to air it out. You know, we've seen Oakland kind of adopt that philosophy, investing in all those pass catchers and weapons. You're going to have to outscore Kansas City. You're going to play them twice a year, and they're going to put up points. I like Noah Fant a lot, a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm big on Noah Fant. All right, my man. Tell everyone about Destination Devi, where they can find all your work, where they can subscribe, where they can get all of that good shit.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, Destination Devi. YouTube channel, Destination Devi. As Davis mentioned earlier, Ray GQ, Q-U-E on Twitter. And I've got a whole bunch of other stuff, but you got to pay for it. Patreon.com/allgas. The best damn Devi community in fantasy football. Man, I appreciate you having me on the show. Sincerely, man, this was an honor. I was excited to do this, Davis. So thank you so much. I hope I did well enough to get another invite back sometime later in the season. If we have that, we're going to have it. Let me stop. Let me not put that in the universe. But yeah, man, just holler at me on Twitter. Check me out on YouTube and patreon.com/allgas.
Yeah, we'll have you back on when it's time to talk about the college football season that either did or didn't happen when we're out here trying to make our selections in rookie drafts, trying to figure out what to do with some of these future picks. So everyone go follow Ray at RayGQ on Twitter, and we'll be back next week with more content for you guys.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.